Good afternoon. It is 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Transportation Committee. A couple bills on the agenda today. First, we're going to start off with House File 975, and then we'll move into the two North Star bills that I am authoring. There is a quorum present. The first bill in front of us, House File 795, Representative Myers. Before we get started, Representative Anderson, have you reviewed the minutes for last meeting, the 17th?
Mr. Chair, I have, and I move approval of the minutes from February 17th.
Representative Anderson has moved the approval of the minutes for February 17th, 2025. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are passed. Okay. Then, very importantly, Representative Myers, is this your first bill in front of the committee as vice chair, even?
Yes, it is.
Would you like to apologize to the committee before you even get started? Those are not yours.
There's a bag of cookies back here. Somebody pointed out. I was maybe going to steal them, but yeah, I'll have to bring.
Representative Myers, it would be highly unadvisable to steal the Girl Scout cookies that the chair has brought for his hearing. And I'm not a freshman.
No, I'll get you guys next time.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. Please introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Lead Cagle. So this is House File 795. What this is doing is just giving us more options and opportunities for driver's appointments at DVS. If I could start out with the A4 amendment.
Please go ahead with the A4 and author's amendment.
Yep, and that's just getting it into the final form as far as just changing when appointments will be available to book.
Representative Myers moves the, what was it, the A4?
Yes.
The A4 amendment. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the A4 is adopted. And the bill is in the shape that you asked for, so please explain the bill and the amendments.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think we've all heard horror stories back in our districts of parents, younger individuals trying to get appointments for DVS. What we're trying to do here is just increase those options and opportunities for people, you know, to get in there. I don't have kids that are 16 yet. My oldest is 12, but I've heard enough horror stories from my friends that have kids where it's been very hard to find an appointment, looking really far out, having to get on at midnight for some of these openings. You know, I know DVS is trying to look at some new things. They're, you know, progressing in the right direction. But I think this helps us to address the backlog of when appointments can be made available. And then there's also a section in here under Section 2 that talks about fees, or what I would say more of trying to incentivize people to follow through with these appointments. You know, I think we may hear from DVS here on the amount of people that aren't showing up, which I believe is around 20%. You know, we're trying to find those opportunities to get people to show up, fulfill the need, and clear that backlog. And I know there's a couple of amendments, or happy to take any questions.
No, thank you for bringing this bill forward. As a father of two teenagers who recently went through the pain of this. I appreciate it and worked on it in the past as well. Let's move to the other amendments. Lead Cagle, do you want to do the A5 or 3 first? Which one do you want to do first? We'll start with the A5 amendment, Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair, I will move the A5 amendment. And then Representative Cagle, do you want to talk about it or do you want me to talk about it? And then Representative Cagle will, since she's
go ahead, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment that I worked on with Representative Tapke would kind of gate appointments. So the first month would only be available to people who live within the county or an adjacent county, and then it opens up further and further to the public. So it really allows for people who are in Greater Minnesota to make sure that they have they get the primary availability to those appointments.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Any of the members have questions on that? Representative Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Lee Cagle. I think everybody on this committee wants to figure out the best way to address this backlog we have and the problems that we're having. With this amendment, how I look at it is, DVS is a service for, everybody in Minnesota, no matter where you're at. I'm trying not to limit some of that. So because of the amendment, how I look at limits it, I would ask members to vote no.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Myers. So this comes forward because we heard time and time again constantly last session in transportation, and I know you weren't here for that piece, but time and time again, anytime we tried to talk about exam stations and taking exams, is that a huge portion of what we were told constantly was the problem was that Metro folks are going into Greater Minnesota and taking up all of the spaces that were available there, and then local people throughout Greater Minnesota were unable to get the tests taken that they wanted to take. And so this would help to alleviate that problem. And I really hope that we are taking this amendment to make sure that we are being fair throughout the state.
Thank you,
Representative Myers.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Tapke. Again, I think DVS is doing some good things to expand that. And I feel like this amendment would cut off some of that. I think we need to have that opportunity. If a family is traveling somewhere, they know they're going on a vacation somewhere at a different time. DVS is for everybody in Minnesota. If I'm, traveling to the North Shore with one of my kids when they get to that age and we can set something up, I think we need to have those options and opportunities. So again, I would just ask members to vote no.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Myers. I know that the department is here. Director Zhang, if you want to weigh in on this amendment. So as you go to the testifier table, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author of the amendment, I'm looking at this amendment, and the way it was presented was that, for the first 3 months, it's going to be open to only people within the county. There, it doesn't look like this gate that you're creating has a door in the gate. Then it looks to me as though this will forever require an individual to go and take their test within one county or the next county. The way this is written does not appear to have a gate whatsoever.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Director Zhang, please introduce yourself, please, just for the record. We know who you are, but others may not. And then I'd love to hear your position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. We appreciate the thought around making appointments available for those in the county. It really presents two challenges for DVS. One is from a technology standpoint, it's really difficult to implement. It would require us to do some site or customization to MnDrive, which is something that we don't do very lightly, I can proudly say that we haven't done any customization to the system. It's an off-the-shelf product. We work very closely with the vendor to use the product as it's designed so that it remains stable. Adding this piece of technology, mapping counties, mapping locations, that presents a technical challenge for DVS, and for that we encourage that we keep the system open. And then secondly, to the representative's point, that we want to make the appointments available for all Minnesotans. If the appointments are going to be available, we'd like to ensure that all Minnesotans have access to them.
Thank you, Director. And I'll just say, as like I had mentioned, a lot of my kids and their friends have gone through this, and so I know that a lot of parents actually have scheduled like weekend mini vacations around where they need to go, whether they're a lot in the Brainerd area or southern Minnesota or that. But So I appreciate those comments, and I too would have some reservations about the amendment. Representative Tapke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will withdraw the amendment and on it with Representative Cagle.
Thank you. The amendment, the A5, has been withdrawn. I appreciate the discussion. Important topic to have. We do have a fiscal note that wasn't in your packet. If we could have one of the pages, distribute that for the members. We're going to move, before we go to testifiers, to the, I believe it's the A3 amendment. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill forward. I would like to move A3 and talk a little bit about that. So, and I hope you'll take this as a friendly amendment. I do want to give kudos to the DVS. I have a 15-year-old daughter, and we just did her permit test, and we were in and out in 45 minutes, which was fantastic. So I know there's a lot of progress moving forward with the availability of appointments, which is the goal that I think everyone in this room has. So this amendment is looking at the fees. And when I first read the bill, I was like, yeah, accountability, I agree. And then as I thought more about it, I am just concerned of the unintended consequences of what this would mean, which would mean that if a kid is sick, they're still going to bring him to the appointment. And then if the kid is sick and then they're in a car with the driver, then potentially that driver is going to also get then sick and might be out for 2 or 3 days. So then we have another issue with the backlog. And so that's one of the reasons. So I feel like we need to make it accountable, but yet not so much so that they would make decisions that could put others in harm's way. So that's one of the reasons. And then the second part is, I think increasing fees really sometimes impacts people who can't afford it. And so if we increase fees, there might be people who, it might be too much to even make an appointment at all because they can't even afford $50 if something were to happen. And so that's another area that I'm just concerned about the fees. And I think some of the other parameters that are in here, especially with the growing number of availability of appointments right now to date. I know that there's, over the last month, I understand there's been, I would love to hear from DVS on how many appointments are available as of today. So those are my two concerns, and hopefully you'll consider.
Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to go to Representative Anderson, and then we'll go to the director.
I have a question on the amendment. So it looks like it completely deletes Section 2 of the bill, which would then delete all the fees. That section is all the fees within this subdivision. Every fee.
Yes.
Representative Green, we also have nonpartisan staff if you need.
Yeah, I would just like some clarification on that.
Mr. Burris, can you provide?
Thank you.
Does Section 2, the generates all fees, is that deleted in this amendment? Is that? I think that's your question.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, so the amendment would delete Section 2, which would be a change to the statute, but the underlying statute would then remain and be unchanged, so the current law fees would stay in place.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Director Zhang?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question, Representative Green. We, as of this morning, we have over 6,000 appointments available in all 10 regions. Again, the team has been working tremendously hard to make appointments available. Very proud of the progress we've made. Of course, we still want to do more. We want to be able to have appointments available whenever any Minnesotan wants that test available for them. And with the additional resources that the legislature provided last session, we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to meet that goal this summer. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for the answer.
Representative Green, we speak through the chair.
I'm so sorry, Chair.
Back to you.
More grace. I appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
No problem.
Representative Myers, do you have any feedback for the amendment?
Yeah. Representative Green, thank you for the amendment. You know, again, I think DVS is moving in the right direction to help, fill that backlog. And, 6,000 is a lot. I think we need to be you know, moving forward with an incentive to get people to show up. I think the $20, which I think is currently, currently right now, I think it's helped, but it's not helped enough. I think the premise behind this is to get people to make sure that they're fulfilling those within a timely, within a timely manner. So I would ask members to vote no.
Representative Green, back to you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I also though feel like I have to ask, like, how does this make things more affordable for Minnesotans by raising a fee like this?
Representative Myers.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Green. I think what we are trying to do here is deal with the issues that parents have to go through when they're trying to get these appointments, that they're up in the middle of the night trying to get these. And we have people that are, booking appointments that are just trying to book appointment to get anything on there. And then they're just either not showing up to this for no reason, or they're not trying to work towards this backlog. I think this is going to give us an opportunity to address that by, you got a teenager that's, needs to show up, because I think $20 isn't something that's going to incentivize them. I think if we can do this amount, it's probably going to help with that backlog.
Thank you. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question maybe for the bill author, but possibly. So my concern is on line 2.28, the very first examination fees. Is it current statute that there's a fine for failing twice and before we were able to take a third crack at it?
Senator Myers or Director?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Berg, that is correct. After two fails, the third test, the customer has to pay $10 before they can take the test.
Representative Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you tell me why that is? I just... As a parent of somebody who did not pass on their first try, I guess maybe I have a soft spot for people who struggle a little bit. Can you tell me, is that to cover administrative costs? Like, just a better understanding of it, I would feel better about this being part of our laws. Thank you.
Director Zhang, and then we have Representative Olson and Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berg, the intent of the, well, I shouldn't speak for the intent. I think... The hope is that folks are studying, customers are studying for the test and they pass it the first time. When we have to retest, that takes up valuable resources and time. And so the incentive is to get folks to pass the first time. And we do a lot of things on our website and with information and resources that so the folks can be prepared their first time and be successful that first go. And so that fee is a disincentive to not practice and to not study and to be there, to come prepared.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the director, you just mentioned the phrase valuable resources involved in providing these tests. Can you shed some light on the cost of what DVS incurs when an individual signs up, takes a slot, and then doesn't show up? Now, right now, we've got a $20 fee if you're a no-show under 24 hours. Is that the total cost? I'm a believer that the government is not here to make money. We shouldn't be making money off of our constituents. We should be taking just enough money from them to provide them the services that are necessary. Can you shed some light on how much it costs or what the loss is if that 20-minute or that 30-minute time slot for a test goes unanswered?
Director Zhang.
Mr. Chair, Rep. Olson. We don't break down the cost per exam in that manner, and I think it presents some challenges in different exam stations, and I'll just give an example of in some of our smaller exam stations in the further reaches of the state, we have 2 to 3 examiners, and we offer every single appointment that's available to them. When they're not doing exams, when those appointments aren't taken, they're assigned other work. And then on the reverse, here in the metro, we're usually not having appointments available, and so when that appointment the person doesn't show up for that appointment, it ends up being just a total loss for that time. But it's really difficult to quantify because of the different makeups of the exam stations. What we do encourage folks is that if they know that they can't make the appointment, to go and cancel that as soon as possible, And if they don't do it within the 24 hours, then they incur the $20 fee.
Thank you, Representative Olson. You good?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it safe to say that an individual working for DVS providing these sorts of tests is making $20 an hour? Is that a safe bet?
Director Zhang?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, there is a pace range that we could provide. I believe $20 is within that range.
Thank you, Director Zhang. Representative Kraft, and then we'll have at least one testifier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Myers, for bringing this bill. So just some questions. Do we, maybe this is for, I'm not sure what this is for. Is there a charge for driver's tests today?
Director Zhang.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kraft, the first two road tests are do not have a fee associated. If they fail both times and they take the third and subsequent test, there's a $10 fee.
Okay.
Follow-up?
Yes. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. But if they pass, then they have to pay for a driver's license, I gather. Is that correct?
Yeah. Representative Kraft, you don't get multiple follow-ups. So if that's your question, or do you want to go to something else?
Why not?
Because we have a full committee and you got 16 members on the committee. So
then, okay, I have more than Mr. Chair.
That's why I'm reaching out to you to maybe be a little more comprehensive question.
So my question would be is, how often does this happen now? Do you know that raising it to $50 will reduce it? And have we considered other things to use that time? If it happens, the other thing you could do is you could have a standby person that could be able to get in at the last minute, a standby kind of approach. I'm just concerned about, I appreciate trying to do it better. And I'd also say, if you could, the last point would be, do we have a problem right now? It sounds like with the additional people we've added that we don't. So I appreciate having more visibility. I'm just thinking that raising the fees, it doesn't feel like there's that it's going to fix a problem that we have right now. And I don't want to unduly burden people that don't certainly need it.
Director Zhang and then Representative Myers, if you want to comment on it, though it's your bill, you can, of course. But we'll start with the director.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft. Of all appointments in fiscal year 24, 34% of appointments made were canceled. And just under 50%, 48% of those appointments that were canceled within the last 24 hours. And so we know that when this no-show fee was implemented, we saw our no-show rates drop. Not significantly, but they definitely did drop. There's no indication for us that raising the no-show fee would actually change the behavior. And so we just don't have enough data to know if that will have that impact.
Representative Myers?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is I believe in the past, supporting that no-show fee was bipartisan. We're just trying to find more, ways to ensure that we can fulfill those slots and people are showing up.
Not that we're particularly interested in what happens on the other side of the Capitol, but I understand that the bill has a good bipartisan measure to it as well. Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to make note as well that we did a ton of work on this area last year, and so we've gotten in the last 2 years, and we've gotten taken that a long way. So I would love to continue getting updates as this goes forward as to how we're doing here from the department, but also to make specific notice of very soon we passed a plain language bill that the goal is to reduce the number of times that folks who English is not the first language it takes to take the test. And so we are moving that forward. So hopefully that will help with this problem in conjunction with the other things that got done. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have one testifier, and Director Zhang, if you have closing comments, you're welcome to as well. But Pat Benner, legislative representative, asked me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pong Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services. And I just want to appreciate the opportunity to provide some thoughts on this bill. We do have some concerns about the impacts of this bill. We share the desire to make appointments available for all Minnesotans, and we've been working very hard to make those appointments available. And like I shared earlier, we have right now over 6,000 appointments in all 10 regions of the state. Again, very proud of having that. We're going to work really hard to have even more appointments available closer to the date when folks want to take their tests. Our concern is that this bill will remove some flexibility for DVS to implement creative solutions should we find there's a benefit to do something like that. And a great example of that is we recently converted our Plymouth site to all Class D, just the passenger road test, to build some efficiencies there, create some focus, and so we can really churn out appointments. We've seen a dramatic increase in appointment availability because of that work at Plymouth. This language would require us to make those kind of decisions a little bit slower, take us a little bit longer to implement them, and therefore not see those benefits as quickly. Additionally, DVS has offered appointments 6 months in advance in the past, and we saw that when we did that, our no-shows and our cancellation rates were actually much, much higher than what we see today. Just life happens, and I think Minnesotans have every intent to make the appointment that they book. But what we see is that when appointments are made that far out in advance, they end up not working for a plethora of reasons. Having appointments in this very, very short window of 30 days makes sure that Minnesotans are ready, but also DVS is ready, and that we can commit to those resources, to those appointments, to ensure the customers get the service that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we hear that other testimony, technically the A3 was on the table. All those in favor of the A3? Those against the A3? Nay. The motion does not prevail. Sorry, Director, we kind of went out of order there, but didn't mean to steal your thunder on your clothes. We'll have Mr. Benner. Yep. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Pat Benner, legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. I'm here today to express AFSCME's support for raising the no-show fee from $20 to $50 on the current no-show rate for DVS license exams. From a staff perspective, is unacceptable, with the ballpark of 20% of tests going unfilled every day, and 48% of those being last-minute no-shows. That means essentially 1 in 10 tests today and every day goes unfilled with very little capacity to be able to improve. No one's able to take those tests or fill those slots. It strongly harms efficiency in a moment when we're working like heck to get out of the DVS backlog that we've been in, certainly since 2018, 2019, when I started at AFSCME. That being said, we are not necessarily wed to $50 being the final fee, nor do we envision needing to keep this fee long term. If folks were interested in exploring a sunset on increasing the no-show fee or on the no-show fee altogether, or having some sort of study to get better data as to what how impactful the current no-show fee or an increased one works, we'd be happy to support that as well. It is a situation where we as staff have made quite a few sacrifices over the years trying to improve efficiency. So since 2019 and COVID, obviously, there was a massive consolidation of testing locations. That meant that a lot of our workers went from commuting 10 minutes to their local station. They were going up to an hour away to a different one. We dealt with, of course, some very frustrated people over the years, including folks who have physically assaulted or threatened much more violent assault against our staff, which is why you all appropriated additional security cameras for testing locations, which we appreciated that you did. In the 4 metro area testing locations, we are open on Saturdays and Sundays. That was a change in policy. It used to be a just Monday through Friday thing. Our members are not paid anymore for doing that work, but we do recognize that it is all important to try to get through the backlog, and we do feel that adding some additional deterrents may improve efficiency. And like I said, if it turns out it doesn't, we can absolutely revisit it. Those are sort of the extent of my comments. I sort of wanted to get in before the amendment was on, but yeah, it was a little different. So sorry about that. But thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Myers.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And certainly as a father that recently went through it, I appreciate the work of the driver's exam people. Very courteous and appreciate how they handled my children. We're just going to lay the bill over, so any final comments? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just I would encourage, I'm listening to this, and what this screams out to me for is a standby list. If you're having one in 10 that aren't there, then people may be really urgent, and having a standby with a text list or something like that to get people to come in, it seems like that kind of an approach would deal with this issue a lot more effectively than potentially a lot more effectively than raising rates where no one has said that it's going to solve the problem. So I would just encourage that.
I appreciate the comments, and if you dig into it a little bit, I think there is kind of a standby list. You can stay, you can show up and hope that somebody cancels, but that takes a lot of resources for parents and students to be there. But we're going to lay the bill over, and if you have better suggestions, I'm sure Representative Myers would be willing to talk about it, and we can explore those options. Seeing no other member comments, Representative Myers, your final comments, please.
No, thank you to the testifiers. Thank you to the committee for hearing the bill, and you know, let's keep moving in the right direction.
House File 795 is laid over. Representative Myers will assume the chair, and we'll move on to the next two bills. You can pass some on this side too.
What else we got?
There's a variety.
Oh, these are for freebie.
It's inbound.
You see that you have the list of testifiers in front of you?
Yeah, somewhere.
Mr. Chair, I thought there was no props. Mr. Chair, I thought we had a no props rule.
That would be the House floor. This is the Transportation Committee. When you're testifying, feel free to.
So thank you, Chair Kosnick. You know, the plan for you today is that you've got two bills. One is House File 269. The other one is House File 795. Oh, sorry. 749. Do you want to start with just doing a general overview of both?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. My motion will be for House File 269, and then we'll move that bill. But House File 749 is very similar. We're going to lay that over within the committee as well. But I would prefer to just introduce the topic, and then we can have testifiers on both bills at one time, and then we'll go back to the formal motions.
Thank you. We will proceed with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members and the public that is with us. House File 269 is the beginning to finally end North Star commuter rail line. It has had ridiculously low ridership, ridiculously huge operating subsidies, and ridiculously expensive maintenance cost. While the North Star commuter rail line has had a sad and storied history, the bill before you is pretty straightforward. The bill directs the Metropolitan Metropolitan Council and the Minnesota Department of Transportation to request the federal waiver of obligations and to discontinue the North Star operations. So, Mr. Chair, I would move House File 269 to the General Register. And then I'll have more testimony.
So your motion is to move 269 to the General Register.
That is my motion, Mr. Yep. Chair. The Met Council and MnDOT in this bill will report back to us the outcome of the request for a federal waiver and termination of the operations of the North Star line. If the request is granted, a proposal plan with steps in the process to terminate North Star must be submitted to the legislature within at least 90 days. And as I mentioned separately, we have House File 749 that sets performance requirements that if not met, the Met Council must seek immediate federal waiver to terminate the North Star without federal fiscal obligations. Just for background, there was news today that we'll hear in later testimony that I believe the Met Council and MnDOT agree with the intent of this bill and to terminate North Star, and we'll look forward to hearing from them. I'm glad they finally recognize what we've been saying for a long time, that Minnesotans and taxpayers shouldn't have to fit the huge expense of that North Star has been doing. So for background members, I'll just share a description of the North Star commuter rail from the Met Council's 2025 unified budget. In that budget, it states North Star commuter rail operates between Big Lake and Target Field in downtown Minneapolis with six stops along the route. Weekday service in 2025 was expected to consist with four weekday trains, morning and evenings, and special events serving Minneapolis and no weekend service. Major sources of revenue include passenger fares, state general fund appropriations, and the Metropolitan Area Transportation Sales Tax, replacing the net subsidy contributions from Anoka and Hennepin County. Net subsidies continue currently from Sherbourne County and the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Major sources of expenses include salaries, benefits, diesel fuel, materials and supplies, a professional service contract with Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad to operate the commuter rail, and additional expenses relating to cleaning the vehicles, stations, and facilities. Operations of the commuter rail are performed under a contract with the railroad, with maintenance performed by Metro Transit. Members, for fiscal year 2025, the North Star has over $16.2 million in annual total expenses, plus authorized capital programs and capital improvement plans, which are basically maintenance costs that are planned through 2030, that are over $37 million in addition to the annual operating expenses. These are for things such as overhauls on the tracks, overhauls on the locomotives and passenger cars, equipment upgrades and storage, facility and infrastructure improvements, and software system upgrades. Again, all totaling over $37 million in planned maintenance. And even with limited service, that's an incredible amount of money in taxpayer cost. To offset that, in 2023, North Star had passenger fare revenue of under $324,000 from less than 400 average weekday riders. The subsidy per ride then was over $116 per ride. North Star opened for service in 2009, and since then ridership has always underperformed relative to the original forecast. And those are not my words. Those are from page 6 of the 2023 North Star Rail Corridor post-pandemic study. My words would be that it's time to mothball this boondoggle. It has low ridership, has huge operating subsidies, and ridiculous maintenance costs. For more perspective on the ridership, the report further explains that North Star was projected to have about 4,000 average weekday boardings for the opening year in 2009, and that is much higher than the $1,800 average observed for the same period. So when it opened, it was supposed to have 4,000
average boardings, and it only had 1,800. In 2019, an all-time peak in ridership for the North Star, and that's pre-pandemic, the average weekly boardings were still below that first year's 4,000 ridership projections. For all of 2019, North Star's best year, it only had 2,660 average weekday boardings. 10 years of operations, and it was still significantly below the first year projections, and today it is horribly worse. For additional background for members that may not be as familiar, from the 2024 North Star Extension Assessment Study that came out last year, North Star Commuter Rail was initially conceived in the late 1990s to provide alternative transportation options along the fast-growing corridor between the Twin Cities and St. Cloud metro area. The initial commuter rail feasibility study in 1999 conducted by the North Star Corridor Development Authority, it was assumed that the northerly terminus of the corridor would be the city of St. Cloud and potentially extend to the town of Rice. The Development Authority was a joint powers agreement formed by the state to develop commuter rail in that corridor. The NCDA prepared a preliminary engineering report in June of 2001 and submitted that to the FTA. At the time, the FTA was prioritizing projects that attracted new rail riders, but in 2022, the FTA modified the criteria for new starts, which is now the CIG program, to emphasizing a cost-effectiveness analysis that concentrated on the time, travel time savings, more than new riders, of the entire system instead of simply obtaining new rail riders. The Capital Investment Grant Program, or the CIG, is the FTA discretionary grant program which funds transit capital investments, including heavy rail, commuter rail, light rail, streetcars, and bus rapid transit. With these changes in the methodology, the North Star Corridor Development Authority concluded that for the North Star project to remain competitive in federal scoring, several changes needed to be made. Most notable changes was to revise the project scope and to terminate at the Big Lake station rather than in St. Cloud. This change caused the elimination of the proposed stations beyond Big Lake, the proposed Coon Rapids Foley station, and the Northeast Minneapolis stations. In 2009, North Star Commuter Rail Service began operations between Minneapolis and Big Lake, serving seven stations: Target Field, Fridley, Coon Rapids, Anoka, Ramsey, Elk River, and Big Lake. The North Star is a Metro Transit service operated by the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway on BNSF tracks and right-of-way. At the time, this service was considered to be phase one. Phase two was the planned extension to St. Cloud that would be built once certain ridership goals and other criteria were met. Interestingly, the 2023 legislature actually spent $4 million on this extension study. It has two reports, and the second one evaluating the elimination of North Star was about 3 or 4 weeks past due and just released at 11 o'clock today. The MnDOT assessment study also does not address project viability or feasibility. The report is not limited from addressing project viability and feasibility, but I think taxpayers should get an opinion from MnDOT for the $4 million study spent. I'm disappointed that it took them until 11 o'clock today to release their study and without any advance notice or courtesy of the study being released today. But even before the study was released, it's pretty obvious the whole project, whether extended or not, is not moving people or relieving congestions and not serving a viable or feasible transit operation. The North Star is not feasible or viable. It is a loser of a line that needs to terminate. Taxpayers are tired of increasing taxes and shouldn't have to keep paying for this loser. I am encouraged that the report and the release from the Metropolitan Council and MnDOT today, that they want to also explore terminating North Star and possibly augmenting that with a bus rapid transit system. And so with that, I will conclude my opening, and we could go to testifiers. Testifiers could comment on both of the files in front of the committee today.
Thank you, Chair Kosnick. Before we go to our list of testifiers, I know Lee Cagle had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just kind of curious what the process would be. How does the federal government forgive this loan?
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. Representative Cagle, this is a discussion that we've been working on in conjunction with introducing this bill with federal representatives. And as we found out today, Met Council and MnDOT have also been discussing that. And they will probably speak to that even a little better in their testimony later today. But essentially, we request a waiver of the obligations.
Lee Cagle, any other follow-up?
I'll save it for later. Thank you.
Well, you know, before we get to testifiers, hopefully it's as fast as possible. I think that's what we're looking for. But I'm going to have for both House files here, we're going to have the testifiers come forward. I know there's several people on here for both bills, so we're just going to include them all here, starting with Anita Meeks. Annette Meeks, you know, please identify yourself for the record and the organization that you're with.
And Mr. Vice Chair, Chair, just for the committee's information, we'll go through the testifiers, and I look forward to a good discussion on that with the departments.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Myers, Chair Kosnick, committee members. My name is Annette Meeks. I'm presenting today a bit of a historic overview of the failed North Star commuter rail service. I do so as the former chair of the Metropolitan Council's Transportation Committee, who was in that position when North Star went online in November of 2009. At the time, it served, as Chair Kosnick just said, a 40.1-mile service from Minneapolis to Big Lake. Well before my service on the Met Council, council appointed by Governor Ventura, led by Ted Mondale, along with county commissioners in Anoka and Hennepin County, began developing this plan in 1997 to develop Minnesota's what they believe first commuter rail line. At that time, as we just learned, the line was 81.8 miles long, running daily. They ran into a blockade, of course, when the George W. Bush administration changed the requirements for commuting rail, which required there to be a cost effectiveness, which North Star never, ever could make. The only way they could qualify for the federal full funding grant agreement was to cut the line in half, cut out some stops, and try and make it as cheap as possible. We even had to cut off Wi-Fi from the line. That's how the line eventually became what we know today as North Star. I've waited for 14 years, committee members, for someone to have the courage to do what Chair Kosnick is doing today. And this has to stop, this wasteful rail plan that never, ever should have been operated. When it opened in November of 2009, it's worth noting that according to the Met Council, quote, ridership in the first 15 days averaged 2,207 riders per day, short of the goal, even in the first 15 days of 2,460. We were told to disregard those 2 months of riders, though, that the only months that would matter started in 2010. Since 2010, ridership was projected to be almost 900,000, yet it has fallen short every single year. Facts have often gotten in the way of transit advocates who've advocated for more, not less, rail service, including expanding it to St. Cloud. So I'm going to give you three very quick alarming statistics from transit studies from comparing North Star to rail service in other similar-sized cities that have existed along at the same time as North Star. Amongst our peers, North Star has consistently had the lowest ridership. Fact, prior to COVID, daily ridership was consistently between 2,200 and 3,300 per day, almost the same as it was the day it opened. Fact, North Star has never significantly increased ridership, nor will it ever. Since COVID, North Star ridership is down to approximately 300 daily riders. Planning documents show it was supposed to be nearly 4,000 by today. Amongst peers, North Star has the highest per passenger subsidy amongst like-sized commuter rail systems, period. Fact, in 2019, daily ridership averaged a public subsidy per rider at approximately $19 per passenger each way, $38 for a round trip. Since COVID, since 2022, according to the Met Council's numbers, the average subsidy per passenger now is up to $173 per ride. If that isn't outrageous, I don't know what is. But more importantly, amongst peers, again, Northstar has the lowest fare box recovery of any rail line in the country. The cost effectiveness of Northstar Rail has always been a problem. Rail advocates have told us it will take time to build a customer base. I'm here to tell you after 14 years, there is no base. There is no customer base for Northstar, nor will there ever be. But more importantly, it's taking money away from transit systems that could use that, including bus service, light rail service inside the metro area, and it's all going to support out of general fund revenue the Northstar failed rail line. The fact remains, Minnesotans have been paying dearly for 14 years for a dream of just a few county commissioners that somehow Minnesotans will take the train from Big Lake to downtown Minneapolis every day to commute to work. That ridership never materialized, nor will it ever. The reports and recommendations put forward by Chair Kosnick today merit your very serious consideration. It is one of the biggest boondoggles in state history, and it is time to bring it to an end. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Jesse Cook. After that will be Darwin Schufflane. Please state your name.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Cook, and I'm a resident of Minneapolis. If you spend the day at Denver Union Station, you'll see 72 commuter trains on RTD's A-line. On the other side of the Rocky Mountains, Utah's Front Runner will pass through Salt Lake City 30 times per direction. Caltrain will pull into San Francisco 52 times, and Metra's Electric District will send 64 trains from downtown Chicago. Meanwhile, in Minneapolis, the Northstar will depart Target Field just 4 times. It's no secret that the Northstar is underperforming. After all, that's why we're here today. But cutting our fastest and most consistently on-time transit service will be detrimental for our future mobility needs. We know that the Northstar can be successful. The key is flexibility. Running just a few times a day with only one reverse commute, that leaves no room for spontaneity, and it doesn't let the Northstar offer itself as a reliable transit option 99% of the time. So maybe the solution does involve bus replacement in the short term, but that doesn't mean we ought to abandon heavy rail entirely. The focus now should shift to adding capacity on the line, constructing that third mainline rail on the BNSF right-of-way, improving passenger service, yes, but also freight flow on the busiest corridor in the Twin Cities, finally allowing the Northstar to reach its full potential as a critical component of our regional transit network. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Darwin is next. Up after that is Joel Mueller. And just a reminder, 2 minutes for testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. I am Darwin Schaeferlein, a disabled resident and homeowner in Bloomington who is here to testify against HF-269. I grew up in Fridley, 500 feet away from the Northstar station since it opened in 2009, and for many years of my life, this train was important for trips, whether crossing under the tracks to get to my elementary school or perhaps my Fridley High School special education class, going to a Twins game, or maybe any number of trips my friends in Buffalo or St. Cloud have had to come visit the Twin Cities. The Northstar is more than just a transportation option. It is a formative experience that defines many childhoods, including my own, and remains relevant as a transportation option as adults. All over America, riding the train is a normal life experience and makes living in this messed up country just that much more bearable. Whether you live in Santa Fe or Ogden, whether you got trains like the Rail Runner and Front Runner running frequently, actually connecting to the cities they were intended to be built for, instead of being sabotaged from jumping, which I will elaborate on my testimony against HF-749. A bipartisan agreement was reached in 2023, wherein the Northstar was to be evaluated for extensions or possible bus replacement service, as we come to find out today, And as a concession to the Republicans, this bill is completely redundant and would make the ongoing legislation in that study not only more expensive and needlessly delayed for everybody. So even if you want the North Star to be ended, it's only going to make the process longer, and it is completely unnecessary. I urge this committee to let HF 269 die right here. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Joel Mueller up, and then Brady Rathbun next.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. I'm Joel Mueller with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. We are a labor union that represents the train crews that operate the North Star trains, and we are also members of the Teamsters Rail Conference. My comments will be directed for both bills, so I'll just keep it short and sweet. Many Minnesota workers rely on the North Star commuter service to get them to or from school, work, shopping, and events in downtown Minneapolis or any other commuter stations in between. Using this service avoids the hassle of traffic jams and difficult road conditions when during inclement weather. The North Star service also gives commuters another option to the congested I-94 corridor that provides an opportunity for workers to use their commute time as work time, as the coaches are equipped with workstations and tables. Not only does this service provide 4 daily round trips for commuters between Big Lake and Minneapolis, it also provides special event service to the Twins games at Target Field that are popular with fans. Since 2022, the ridership is on the increase, and with businesses and employers looking to embrace the return to office work model, the ridership is likely to increase in the coming years beyond that margin. In recent years, several comparable metro areas are considering or have developed or expanded commuter rails in states such as North Carolina, Florida, Texas, Michigan, and Tennessee. For Minnesota to discontinue an existing commuter line that already has the resources and equipment and infrastructure in place would be a mistake. It would put Minnesota at a competitive disadvantage when it comes to economic development. On behalf of the railroad workers that I represent, I ask you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Brady Rathbun? If not, Rox Everingham? Okay. Katie Nicholson?
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me to speak. My name is Katie Nicholson. I live in St. Paul and care deeply about the future of public transportation for all areas of the Twin Cities. I oppose HF 749 because I believe in North Star's future. North Star, which is a small percentage of the Met Council's budget in the grand scheme of transit, has scheduling that does not allow for flexibility for trips outside of a 9-to-5 job. However, I think with better scheduling, North Star could be a fantastic train line. Data shows that pre-pandemic, North Star had a per-passenger subsidy of $19, which is on par with many of our current-day local buses, despite the scheduling back then not being up to par with LRT local bus and bus rapid transit routes. While the post-pandemic subsidy is overall higher, this number has also gone down from $173 per passenger in 2022 to $116 per passenger in 2023, which coincides with an extra trip added in both directions in October of 2023. The data also seems pretty clear that on the fact that the lower frequency and lack of funding compared to other transit modes is hampering the potential success of North Star, not to mention the lack of a direct one-seat ride to St. Cloud. HF 749 is also worded specifically in a way to force North Star to try and hit targets that it hadn't even hit pre-pandemic, which is very much intentional and designed to kill the North Star line instead of giving it a fighting chance to create ridership. While I do believe that there is a nuanced conversation to be had about North Star's future, it's clear to me that in regards to rail in Minnesota, that the opposition is not acting in good faith. If it was actually about better transit, the money saved would go into other public transit investments and not the general fund. Chair Kosnick wants to kill this line seemingly because it's a waste of money, yet despite this, he has no issues seeking out $40 million $1 million in funding for the reconstruction of one interchange in Lakeville. MnDOT also has plans to reconstruct I-35W in Burnsville between the river and the split, which will cost $80 million, with other construction coming later down the line that will add even more expense. In comparison, the cost of the North Star line is a drop in the bucket. I hope that we can rethink and oppose this bill, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll go next with Charlie Zelli. Chair Zelli.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just comment, the project that was questioned, which is probably not within decorum, is a $40 million project on the interstate that has hundreds of thousands of riders every day. So it's not really a fair comparison, but it's a free country. You can say his testimony, but the fact of the matter is it sounds like the decision is being made, so I look forward to the continuing testimony.
Good afternoon, committee members. I'm Charlie Zelli, chair of the Met Council, and Chair Kosnick. I have taken the prerogative to invite my colleague, Commissioner Daubenberger from MnDOT, to join me because I think we have a shared message and can stand to answer questions together for the efficiency of the process. First off, and I'll just really be brief, we actually support the idea of carefully evaluating and exploring the alternatives to commuter rail. No question, the subsidy of some $115 per trip is not acceptable. And although North Star was performing much better before the pandemic, it wasn't a stellar performance. However, we think it was visionary. We support and actually appreciate deeply the work of BNSF and all those who were advancing the idea of even expanding commuter rail. But since the pandemic, the ridership has dropped to approximately 16% of what it was in 2019. And even then, it shows very little growth over the past number of years. And in the past few years, I've certainly been one to say, you know, let's make sure we're carefully considering alternatives. Is there a way to deploy commuter rail so that it's effective? But I think at this point, we have to agree. We know that travel patterns have changed. We know we've learned a lot about transit effectiveness. And as I think was previously testified, if those resources can be deployed more effectively for this area of the metro, we think we can do actually a better job. The idea of exploring bus service isn't to completely replicate the North Star schedule. It would actually be to enhance more frequency, more direct service to these communities. And we have found those 10-minute headways of our arterial bus rapid transit, our other transit ways, makes a real difference. And people are traveling differently. They're not just commuting from a distant suburb to the center city. People are traveling around the metro. And people are traveling all times of the day. And they are traveling to live their lives, whether it's groceries, school, medical care. We know that transit and transit accessibility really makes a difference. And we have learned a lot as we are building out a network of transit alternatives. We think we can have better access in this area with other bus alternatives. And so that's something that is not just exploring how you shut something down. It's more how you explore enhancing service. The second thing I'd say is that we have been in touch with reaching out to both FTA and to BNSF, and we are just at the early stages. We know that we'll have to put our heads together. This is a project that was built with many agreements, and that's why it's important for us to take appropriate steps. And as the chair said, sooner than later, to find out what realistically will it take. But we know that it is possible, and we know that we have the broad bipartisan support to do what's effective to enhance transit, not to squander the funds. And we know that this additional funds will be very critical for us to provide the kind of frequency and additional transit services we think the Metro deserves.
Thank you for the testimony. Chair Kosnick, do you have anything to?
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to get a point of clarification. Appreciate the comments. Could you just clarify, you are interested in terminating the North Star rail service, correct?
We think terminating the service and providing bus service is the best alternative. We totally support the intention of the bill. We want to take the steps in order to ensure that that course is possible and cost effective. We are in favor of terminating the service.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Zelli. I appreciate the clarification, and it's something we've worked on for a long time, so we finally have something to celebrate that we agree.
Let me ask if there's any, I think that's all the testifiers we had signed up. Is there any public testifiers?
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'll come back.
Hi, my name is Annie Buckle. I'm so glad you're all gathered here today to talk about North Star. 10 years ago, this month, actually came down to the Capitol for the first time with people from St. Cloud. So I am from St. Cloud. I live in St. Cloud. I'm from the area where this train was supposed to go and didn't. So all of these, and I just really want to raise a voice. I grew up in Minneapolis, but I've lived in central Minnesota, first St. Joe. I was on city council. Now I'm in St. Cloud. I just ran for mayor. I didn't make it through the primary, but there are future elections. But I am from St. Cloud. St. Cloud is a place in and of itself that has widespread unity. It's incredible. It's awesome. 10 years ago, I began organizing the North Star train, is what people tell me. And what I tell them is, no, North Star organized me. The people in St. Cloud wanted the train. Just a couple weeks ago, I was in Salem Lutheran Church, where we're going to have a meeting on April 26th. It's a Saturday at 10 a.m. I just sent an email to all of you here on the committee. I hope I didn't miss anybody, that you're welcome to join us at that public meeting about the fact that we want passenger rail to St. Cloud. The beauty of it is that it's nonpartisan. Last time we were down here, we got Representative Baker from Willmar. We got Senator Tim O'Driscoll. We had Jeff Howe, who's now a senator. We had Representative Tice. I know that Senator Jeremy Miller down in Winona wants rail service down there. Jim Abler, when he ran in a special election earlier, sorry, was it time? But he also had that as one of three things. So this is not a partisan thing, as it shouldn't be. In our state constitution, we have transportation outlined. Public transportation is just one way for people to get around who either can't have access, who either cannot drive or cannot, you know, access a car. I will say I'm a single mom of four kids. My oldest two are teenagers. Everything you were talking about, driver's license, was it Representative Kraft? Thank you. Yeah, there is no, just to clarify, all due respect, If your kid fails the exam down in Buffalo, then you have to drive them up to Park Rapids. You can't wait until another one is canceled. No, that's not an option. The fact that we want to raise it to $50, think about the moms in rural Minnesota that have to drive their kids around, and then they also have to pay a higher fee. This state, and I, with all due respect, thank you for your time, all of you elects, but we really have to get clear about what decisions down here mean for families in greater Minnesota. We are under-resourced, and we're not taken seriously. And so I encourage all of you to come to the meeting at 10 a.m. in Salem Lutheran Church. Pastor Kirsten, I talked to her on my way down here. I already sent a letter. There's a few pastors, but a lot of pastors take off on Mondays. So by Friday, I will send you an updated list. Last time, we had over 100 pastors, as well as the Sheikh knew of the four mosques in St. Cloud. All in agreement that we wanted rail. It really brings people together. It doesn't split them apart, and it certainly shouldn't split apart this body. I would suggest that you come. I would suggest you take this issue really seriously, and you make sure that you're aware that all these numbers were floating about how it's failed, it's failed, it's failed. Well, guess what? Big Lake has 10,000 people. St. Cloud's the third largest metro in the state. We're growing, we're set to grow, and the fastest growing corridor in the state is between St. Cloud and the metro.
I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Commissioner, do you have anything you'd like to add? Sorry, or you just want to answer questions if they're there?
I'd like to hear from the commissioner.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have nothing to add, but I certainly stand for questions. And I just maybe would add one more thing. We've been working closely with the Met Council as we've worked on this report. And just what Chair Zelli had communicated, MnDOT is right there with them in sharing these concerns and our interest in moving forward to explore transitioning to a different transit service option. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I'd just make one comment.
Sure.
And I really appreciate our relationship with MnDOT and Commissioner Dallenberger, and we have been, talking and thinking about this for some time. The one thing that I think is in the MnDOT report, and it's important in light of Annie Buckwell's testimony, the difference between commuter rail and intercity rail or intercity services. We think the trips to St. Cloud would be an intercity trip, or Fargo, Moorhead, or beyond. And important to note that if we were to transition away from commuter rail, that doesn't preclude future intercity rail, projects like what has been considered for Duluth or what the second trip to Chicago. So this is just a kind of a different animal, and I really want to point out that that's under the jurisdiction of MnDOT. And when I speak about transit, that's more within the metro, our jurisdiction.
Thank you for that. Representative Tapke, do you have a...
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So this is piggybacking right off that question. My question is piggybacking right off your statements there, Chair Zelli. So I'm assuming this is more toward Commissioner Dobenberger, but can you give us an idea as to what the future is or the plans are for intercity rail, both in Minnesota and the upper Midwest, and what those are? I think that we've had extraordinary success with the second train to Chicago, and that was highly divisive as we were passing that and putting the funding into that, and it is proven nothing but successful for getting people back and forth between Chicago and Minnesota. And so it's a really great thing there and can be great in other places. So can you talk about how intercity rail is planned, and then on the same line as that, as how does this line do intersect with those plans? North Star, that'd be.
Commissioner or Chair?
Mr. Chair, I'll take that. Nancy Dobenberger with MnDOT, Commissioner. And thank you for that question, Representative. We're currently in the process of updating our state rail plan, and it's going to get a lot of what you were just talking about. But I will add the second train from the Twin Cities to Milwaukee and Chicago, the Borealis line, which opened up in late May, has surpassed the ridership projections that we have. So that is intercity passenger rail. And with intercity passenger rail, we work with the Federal Railroad Administration. Commuter rail is one where the Met Council's worked with the Federal Transit Administration. So with that, we had projected over 125,000 or so ridership in the first year. I'm looking to my colleague, Matt Bailey, who's our Director of Passenger Rail. But we already hit 100,000 passengers in October, so just about 5 months into that. And so the interest we're seeing from Minnesotans and others in the Midwest in taking a train to move from one city to another, intercity passenger rail, has been shown to be good. And I know our Federal Railroad Administration, along with Midwestern states, are very excited to build out further passenger rail within the Midwest.
Thank you. Representative Tapke, you have one follow-up here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got questions for Chair Koznick. Would you like me to ask those now, or you want me to hold those until after the commissioners are finished?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Chair Koznick, so that being said, with rail and the future of rail, and from your position as chair of the Transportation Committee, what do you see as the future for rail in Minnesota? And I think that with North Star particularly, you're being extraordinarily unfair with the ridership and those kinds of things, because it would be like if we took I-94, I don't think that the comparison was out of line whatsoever as we're comparing rail to I-94 with the fact of if we cut I-94 off just this side of Monticello, it wouldn't have nearly the number of trips each day on I-94 either. And so that's what we've done to this rail line is we haven't gotten it to the terminus and the two points where we need to make sure that we're connecting populations. And it just doesn't do that today. And I think that it would be significantly better if we did. But I also think that post-COVID, it's a good time to relook and understand exactly how it's going. So what is your future for rail as to what you think we should be doing in Minnesota and the upper Midwest?
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you. Representative Tabke, I think overall, generally to answer your question, we as a committee are going to have that discussion. We as a legislature have been trying to have that discussion and we'll make a decision together, especially in the balance of power that we are encroaching on. So I'll tell you what I think, but I you know, today's report release, which I am frustrated that it was $4 million and 3 weeks late and then dropped upon us unfairly, in my opinion, 2 hours before committee. But I'm glad that the report does finally justify the termination of North Star Operation Systems. As Chair Zelli has mentioned, it is also our position that we, or mine anyways, that we don't necessarily oppose exploring better, more cost-effective transit options in that corridor. We're just simply saying that we cannot and taxpayers should not continue to have this huge astronomical expense for something that is hardly used. If somebody takes the North Star, and there are not very many, but if they take it to work and back 4 days a week, the subsidy on that is $928 in 1 week. If they're doing that, you know, the few people that might be doing that for the whole month, we could buy them a car and a house. It's just the numbers are staggering, and you can't deny that. But, you know, that's the one part. The second part of your question about the future of rail in the state, and I agree. I am encouraged by the second line, the Borealis, you know, and that was already an established line, and we increased service on that, and it seems to be being used. You know, I don't know what the operating and cost and maintenance cost of that is, but that's a different ridership, and I think what the data has shown is that there isn't the ridership in this corridor to support a commuter rail. And so I think it's, you know, the question is how soon can we terminate it and start saving taxpayers' monies and providing better transit options for people in that corridor? That's what the question is. How soon can we do that? And the other thing, in terms of the rider or the service levels in the current North Star, we've had 10 years of data and history. And yes, there was a pandemic, but if you take a look at the post-pandemic report. Might be getting the name slightly wrong. But this corridor, compared to its peers, is even a loser. And so we need to recognize that. And I know that there's a romanticized ideal of riding the train and this and that, and we just don't have the density that we have in other regions like Manhattan or Los Angeles or Chicago. And so we need to recognize that. And I think it's important as a committee that we look at the data, and so I'm glad that we have this. I don't know that it needed to cost $4 million, but I'm glad that we have the data, and it's our job to look at the data and say this is unacceptable waste of taxpayers' resources, and maybe we can do better. And I think I'm looking forward to some of the options that the Met Council and Chair Zelli and Commissioner Dobenberger will explore in providing transit services in that corridor. That's not, this is about just look at the fiscal data and the ridership data, and it's not there. But we can do better, and that's, I think, our job as a committee.
Thank you. Representative Tabke, we do have a long list going. I'll give you one follow-up, then we're going to jump to somebody else.
Thank you. Chair Kosnick, you keep purporting that this report says that this line should be mothballed, but it doesn't actually say that anywhere, and I agree with you entirely. We just got this report, but it doesn't I'm looking at the conclusions and considerations. I'm looking at page 18 and 19, and I've read through. Are you coming to those conclusions on your own, or does the report actually say that?
Chair Cosney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tabke, it has been a conversation that I had earlier this morning, but also the Met Council jointly with that MnDOT put out a statement to that effect, and I asked for Chair Zelli's clarification of that earlier in testimony about 15 minutes ago, and that was my understanding of his clarification.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Kosnick, for bringing this, you know, another thing that's unaffordable, and we've seen a study. And thank you, Chair Zelli. So my question is, how soon can we terminate this?
Representative Kosnick. Chair Zelli.
I'll take a stab at it first, Mr. Chair. I think in light of an agreement, we may have an author's amendment going when this goes to the floor to do it, to request that termination and begin that process even sooner than what the bill language is. But perhaps the chairman has a different.
Well, comment. Mr. Chair, representatives, I think that this is very preliminary, and we need to meet not only with BNSF, our contracted operator, but the Federal Transit Administration, and there are implications for some perhaps financing that came from the state of Minnesota. So we'll have to talk to MMB. And obviously we'll do that in collaboration with MnDOT. I know that this is it was a very complicated set of agreements. There might be a notice period, and I'm not quite sure what that would be, but I think the important thing is that that notice period is a matter of months, not years. And the sooner we explore that, and having been in business for many years, I say there are agreements, and then there's how you get together in a room and figure it out. I'm looking forward to that phase.
Any follow-up, Representative Joy?
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair Zelli, for using the word sooner, because I think it's very important to see all quick we can move along to get this terminated with what it's costing us. When we hear $928 a week for somebody to ride this, you know what it's costing us. This is good governance to stop. This is where we save taxpayers and start moving backwards. Thank you.
Lead Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my comments might be more to the Commissioner and Chair. I have to look at all my notes here. The Met Council District, if we were to terminate this and run buses up to Big Lake, would that be possible within the parameters of the agreement right now, since Big Lake is outside of the Met Council District?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, you're right. The transit jurisdiction that is Met Transit, Met Council, is the seven-county area. It does not include Sherburne County. I would say that the ridership there for those specific districts is probably even smaller than small, but we would certainly be working in collaboration with MnDOT to explore that, but I think our primary focus would be the near-end communities, Tunoka, where we see the bulk of the ridership.
Thank you. So Elk River would no longer have service. So then looking at some of these numbers that were provided in the report, the land existing, or the right-of-way and land, it looks like it was estimated $110 million. When was that last evaluated for its cost, the worth of the land?
Chair Zelli.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can't answer that. We can find our experts.
Commissioner May?
Commissioners.
May you weigh in on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle. I do not know when it was last evaluated, but with any termination of this service and transfer to a different type of transit service, we would need to reevaluate and have appraisals done on the property, the real property, which would include buildings as well.
Mr.
Lee Cagle, one
so
more.
So I guess the one thing is that just mothballing this isn't going to be free. So when I came up with the kind of back of the napkin numbers, it looks like we would have to have a $85 to $90 million on the conservative end loan forgiveness, if I'm understanding correctly.
Commissioner or Chair?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that there's there's certainly value in the assets like station area, actual physical property, and then there's assets like operating authority along BNSF tracks, and which may have zero value. So I think that there's a question of how you, again, put heads together to figure out the puzzle. I think it could be a huge range of alternatives. I'm not quite sure where it would sort out, but I think you're talking about the high end in the numbers you cited.
Krasnick, do you have a follow-up to that?
Well, I would just add, Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle, I think that's why it's important, and we have the two bills, one staying within the committee to continue this discussion, but certainly it's a process that isn't done regularly. But I think when we compare what the annual expenses are, over $16 million annually, plus the cost to keep the line going with very little ridership, the maintenance cost, and the planned cost over the next 5 years is $37 million. By terminating it, there is a savings and a payback, and up front there may be some cost to it, and I think that's important to know. I don't dispute that. But I think we can if we would have done this when I first introduced the bill 5 years ago, your cost would have been already paid back. But so there is a payback period. I like the idea if in the report, instead of $16 million annually total expenses, to provide service that more people will use and will actually get people to where they want to go in the mode that they want to use, if it's a BRT, that's only going to be about $2 million. And I think that's worth exploring. The question, again, just how quickly can we do this, start saving money for the taxpayers, and provide a service that they're actually going to use. That's equally as important as well.
Lee Cagle will give you one more follow-up.
So well, I have some other really, really important questions. So I do think that this this conversation merits more discussion. And so with that, from what I understand, does it take an act of Congress to forgive this loan, Commissioner?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cagle, we believe it would require an act of Congress.
And Mr. Chair, so just kind of my final thoughts here. So we would need an act of Congress to get this loan forgiven. $85 to $90 million maybe estimated, whatever. That doesn't sound like a deal the Trump-Musk administration would take. It would kind of be a bad deal. So I think if you came before him, he'd say you're fired and get out of here with that request. But and then also, you mentioned a floor amendment. I really think we need to do the work in the committees. And so I would highly suggest that we not send bills to the floor that need continued work, and that we do that work here in this committee. Because I think that's really where the stuff needs to get done. I don't have any problem, with merit on the rail or bus. To me, whatever's going to get people around, fine. But I do think that we need to think about, how this is going to move forward with the federal government, that it's going to take an act of Congress, and that, probably more likely an act of God to get the loans forgiven. And so I just want to make sure that we're looking at this in our reality lenses and not our, ideal lenses. And so I think it's a really good thing that we want to work on this and make sure that the North Star line, whatever its iteration is successful, that it's convenient, that it's moving people around, and that it's part of a bigger regional plan of transit and rail transit. Reading the report here, when you look at the stakeholder engagement summary, there's a desire for intercity rail services to support community needs, so that kind of meets some of that, demand for modified and expanded services, and a potential demand for additional services. And so I think we need to listen to the communities. We need to listen to the community members and make sure that we're not coming in and telling. When people work on these things and want these things for a really, really long time, and we invest a lot of public money into it, it's really hard to come and just pull the rug out from under them. And so I think we really need to think about this process in a smart, strategic, and intentional way. And I think this bill is a hopeful thing. It'd be great if the federal government would forgive us of our loans, but with this administration basically cutting, you know, tons of federal employees and budgets, and I just don't see that the Congress would come together and just be like, okay, Minnesota, here's $100 million. See you later. But I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, committee work's really important, but we all know, you know, outside a committee, working together and having those conversations is really key. You know, spending time in people's offices with you, you know, the testifiers, the commissioners, the chair, continue to working together. Rep. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's funny. Last week we had a conversation where there was a project that was going to take 300 years to see a return on our investment with that light rail, and here we're balking at a 5 to 10 year return on investment if we end it today. Boy, what in the world? This is ridiculous. If we, like, let's just put the close sign on it today and quit paying for it, right? And if we have to pay back $90 million worth of loans, guess what? That return on investment is years away, not 300 years away, which was being advocated for last week in another conversation on trains. That's a different thing. I've got a question for the commissioner. In this report here, I'm seeing that this report cost $650,000. The one previously was $231,000. You're allocated $4 million. It says here in fiscal year 2003, but I'm sure that was a mistake in the report. And so my question is, where is the other $3,119,000 going? Maybe that could go towards helping us put some shutters on the doors.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. Those dollars are still remaining, and if I could ask my colleague, Matt Bailey, who's the Director of Passenger Rail, who could talk through that a little bit better.
Mr. Bailey, if you want to introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Matt Bailey. I am the Passenger Rail Director at MnDOT. Representative, to answer your question, we did use that $650,000 for this report, so that remainder is still there for the balance.
Follow-up, Representative Olson.
So I can't remember exactly what the determination of the statute back in 2023 was. Does that go back to the general fund? Do you just get to hang on to it forever and ever? What happens to the other $3,119,000?
Mr. Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative, I would have to check on that. I don't want to speak towards what that would refer back to without the information in front of me. I apologize.
Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick comment and then a question for Chair Kosnick. So, you know, one thing I heard you say, Chair Kosnick, was that you feel like our side of the aisle can romanticize rail, right? And I guess, you know, that feels a little close to motives, but if you're getting to paint with a broad brush.
Mr. Chair, I don't know that I said your side of the aisle. I believe that there's people that romanticize about train travel.
Got it. Sorry about that. I might have misheard. So I feel like sometimes people, right, I feel like sometimes people feel a little stuck in the past about the way they talk about rail, right? And what I worry that we, if we move very quick on this, especially if we are just looking at data from the last 5 years coming out of the pandemic, I feel like we might make decisions that are short-sighted in terms of rail. I have a hard time understanding how the rest of the world rail has largely been effective, right, is what makes world-class cities, is what makes world-class destinations, is what brings in economic development. And I just have a really hard time believing that Minnesota is like the place where rail doesn't work, right? And that is sometimes what I hear, you know, certain people say. And so I hope that on this committee we can have a more robust conversation about what is the real future of rail in Minnesota. I don't want to defend projects that are not working, but I also just say that on behalf of my constituents and what I believe, like, I'm not ready to give up on rail. And that's what I worry we are doing if we move quickly with things like this bill. But my question to you, Chair Kosnick, is I heard one of the testifiers, I believe it was Katie Nicholson, talk about where the funding would go, and, you know, that the funding would go back to the general fund rather than some kind of special revenue. Can you speak to that? Like, if we are saving money from this, is there a way to know that that funding could then go to public transportation projects, future rail projects, as a way to kind of show some goodwill towards we are still wanting to invest in the system rather than just reverting to the transportation, you know, of the past, which is what I fear with a bill like this. Thank you.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmira.
this isn't a five-year decision. We've had 16 years of data since North Star started, and it's never met expectations. It's horribly below. Even its best year, in my comments, was the best year in 2019 was still below what the first year ridership was supposed to be, and we're beyond that, and even worse, it's supposed to have like 5,600 travelers a day, and we're like at half that. So we do have a lot of data on that, and I think that's why the decision was made with the Met Council and MnDOT to agree. More broadly, the geography and the density of our region is not the same as in other areas. If you live in the mountains and you're landlocked, the density just happens naturally. And in order to handle that, some of those other areas in the across the world, it becomes more necessary. Like I mentioned, Manhattan, that's on an island. And it's been there for a long time. And so the people have filled in and required a necessity for commuter travel. And the whole East Coast is a lot different than the Midwest. And I think sometimes we fail to recognize that. And the spending, it's already allocated in transportation and transit funds. And so by not spending that, it remains in those funds. I think on the one bill, the second bill with the performance standards, it may say general funds. That bill is going to be continued to be laid over. But my intention, and I hope the support of this committee, is to keep transportation dollars within the transportation committee, whether it's roads and bridges or rail and transit. And I have a strong commitment to that. So my hope is that, and, you know, for Minnesotans and taxpayers, that we're going to stop losing money on this line, $16 million a year, $37 million over the next 5 years if we needed to maintain the system, and repurpose those dollars to use the modes that people want to use in the areas that they actually need transit more specifically. Previously, Representative Cagle had mentioned, you know, about Elk River and that. We have Greater Minnesota Transit, and we can provide transit services in this corridor through other means, and we do it all the time. Even if they are with or with not in the Met Council District, we can figure that out.
Thank you. Any follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Kosnick. You know, I would just say I would love to talk about the other bill and the spending going back to the general fund. I think, you know, I'm interested to have a conversation about how, if this line were to shut, we can make sure that those funds go towards, you know, future thinking modes. So thank you.
Yeah, and I would say, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, you know, if committee members have a specific, you know, golden egg to cure a congestion problem in a particular area, we're here to listen and do the work, and would be happy to repurpose the dollars to a specific project, or probably more appropriately just put it back in and work out the entire plan.
Thank you. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Kosnick. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about North Star today. I agree that I want our transit dollars to be well used, and this is an important discussion. And also, like many others, I lament that the train didn't originally go to St. Cloud. I think the Bush era change that forced the route to be shortened shows some of the unintended consequences of designing programs or funding on the basis of cost effectiveness. How we design our formulas really, really matters. I also think the way that this bill is written is premature. I think, as a number of folks have said, you know, we just got this extension report a couple of hours ago, and although we have many years of data, and I appreciate the data, you know, being data-driven as an engineer, that's really valuable to me, we need to have a plan. We should not be making decisions on something for which we just received critical information just a few hours ago, and we shouldn't cut transit without a clear plan to fill that gap. I've ridden this line. I've taken the train to Big Lake and the bus to St. Cloud. I'll say, you know, 30% of Minnesotans, all nearly a third of us, don't drive. Whether that's because of age, ability, affordability, or choice. We need options. I appreciate that you want to be effective and have effective and efficient transit. And to do that, we need to, I know I've asked this committee before, what is the problem? And so I'd like to talk about, you know, what is the problem in terms of how do we make our transit more cost effective? What strategies do you look for to make transit cost effective?
Representative Kosnick, and let's make sure we're staying on, you know, the current bill at hand, because I do have a couple more people.
Yeah, I agree with you on data decisions, but we've been talking about this. Today's report just reaffirms previous data that we've had. It's unfortunate we had to waste $4 million to get to this point. But I think it is important to consider in our transit travel time savings. If it takes people three times as long to take transit, they're going to find other options that are faster. Uber, Lyft, drive themselves. I don't remember what the rest of your question was, but Mr. Chair, I would like to move to a vote and then move.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes here, so if Representative Jones could be quick, I'm going to let Representative Ream and then Lead Cagle close, and then we will go to a vote. So if okay. you want to follow sure. up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I think I'll just maybe I appreciate you answering that question. I'd love to expound on that sometime offline because I'd like to add three additional strategies. So Commissioner Zelli mentioned, you know, frequency, kind of all-day service as being a really critical thing. Reliability, you know, just like with a car, people don't want to have to think, right? They just want to go out there and get in a vehicle and go, whether that's a train, a bus, or a car. Also say, as you kind of alluded to, the density of destinations, you know, cities and metros around the world with efficient transit systems are more successful when the distances between their homes and businesses are shorter. I hope, yeah, I think that this year we're going to be hearing bills in order to make those distances shorter between our homes and destinations. And so I hope that you'll be in support of those. We can make our transit system more cost effective. The last piece I'll say, kind of what I'm hearing in this conversation is, you know, commuter rail, given that the things have been changing with the way we work and operate, is maybe a thing that we should reconsider. And that inner city rail, especially as we're seeing on the Borealis, I've taken that multiple times. And that's where hearing from St. Cloud and from Duluth, other people, that's, I think, where the future is. And I hope we can continue that conversation.
Thank you, Representative Jones. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Myers, and thank you, Chair Kosnick, for this robust discussion. I will say that I did attend college in St. Joseph, Minnesota, before the North Star Line was created, and it was difficult to get from St. Cloud to the Twin Cities. We need more transportation options, not fewer, so I am concerned about making any quick movement here to stop what we have in place. I really do feel that this bill needs a lot more work and a lot more discussion. I think we've heard from a number of people who are very concerned about being without this option, and also knowing that, you know, it's going to require an act of Congress to forgive the loan, I think really demands our attention. I think we should not move forward with this and send it to other committees. So I just wanted to add to the chorus of people who think we need to slow this thing down.
Thank you, Representative Ream. And then to close out before the bill author, Lead Cagle.
Yeah, I actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. These are actual questions. So I was just curious if Subdivision 2 is met, but Subdivision 3 is not, what happens?
Chair Kosnick or
Lead Cagle, which bill are you referencing?
279. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. 749, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that bill is going to be laid over and
okay.
work on that.
Okay. Sorry. So I guess then my question is, what happens if we don't get federal approval for that waiver?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Kosnick.
I appreciate that because, you know, it doesn't necessarily take an act of Congress as if that's going to be the talking point. We have the resources. We just need to make sure that we have the will, and I'm encouraged today that Met Council, MnDOT agree that it's time to stop the bleeding on this line. We will ask for a federal waiver. We will work with the federal partners. We have been engaged in conversations with them to have this termination. I'm encouraged that the federal government is looking for efficiencies, and if there was Project A number one in Minnesota that needs more efficiency, this would be the one. It's time to end the North Star commuter light rail for the sake of taxpayers, and we can provide better transit service for them.
So So,
and by the way, I also went to St. Cloud State, and so I'm very familiar with it.
So, Mr. Chair.
Final statement.
Yeah, so you would have the state eat the cost then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, I think that needs to be part of the discussion because the growing annual losses are astronomical, and we will recover. We got to stop the bleeding at some point.
And then just one last.
So, Chair Kosnick, I'm going to give Chair Kosnick, the bill author, the final word.
There's a problem in the counties on the bottom. On effective date, it says final enactment applies to Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington, but not Sherburn. So I'm just kind of curious if there was a reason for that or if just an error.
Chair.
I believe those working with Met Council issues in the past, those are the counties that are affected with the Met Council, and that's why those are in there.
But North Star goes to Sherburn County, too.
I know, but that reference is not...
And we can work with nonpartisan.
I don't think it's.
Matt, do you want to weigh in on that quick?
A big deal.
Mr. Chair and members, that's a pretty standard language to deal with special legislation involving the Metropolitan Council. I don't think it would have a substantive impact on the impact of shutdown partially outside of the jurisdiction of the council.
Thank you.
Thank you. So let the bill author close here and then. House File 749 will be laid over, and then if you want to do your motion for House File 269 to go to the general register.
Well, I appreciate the committee's time today, and I hope we probably will have more discussion on this, but unfortunately we do have other committees coming in and places to be, but the bottom line is with today's report and previous reports and just knowledge, North Star is not viable or feasible in its current form. It's a loser line that we need to terminate, and we need to terminate this line. Taxpayers are tired of increasing taxes, and they shouldn't have to continue to raise taxes to pay for a line that's not feasible. We can use the savings to enhance other transit and transportation items, and I appreciate support.
Thank you, Chair.
I would renew my motion for House File 269 to the General Register.
Chair Kosnick moves House File 269 to be placed on the general register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Mr. Chair.
House File 749, we will just lay that over for future inclusion.
I would move House File 749 to be laid over.
Thank you. Thank you, members. I don't think there's any other business before us, and we are meeting again.
No.
On Wednesday. Thank you.
Meeting is adjourned.
Meeting is adjourned.